Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.
Hello, Howard. How are you?
Hello, Germfest.
Hey, is that my new name now?
That's my new name I've given you. You're wearing a coyote shirt from what decade is that? That's cool.
It's from this decade. Well, not this one, the previous one.
I like
still,
it.
It's very retro.
Very hockey. Hockey days. So we are, it's raining. Phoenix. That rarely happens.
200 and some days since we had decent rains.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Meanwhile, my son's like, oh, can't golf today.
My dad used to say, the farmers must be happy today. I don't think,
are there any farmers? The weed here? Farmers are happy.
Exactly.
So we are here, Panic with Friends. We got a first. We have my friend Joanne Wilson on, the Gotham gal. This will be the first husband. No, Joe Marchese and?
Christy Marchese.
Yeah, Marchese, Mahuzi, Madaisy. Great husband-wife entrepreneurs. This time we have Joanne, who really carries the load for this Fred Wilson character. But Joanne is a great investor, tough cookie. I met her when I started Wall Strip. They had invested in personally in Wall Strip.
All right.
And Joanne took charge of that thing, whipped me into shape, and Lindsay Campbell. Whip Lindsay into shape. And we have some funny stories over the years. But and they are New Yorkers. Her handle is Gotham Gal. She has Gotham Gal Ventures. She's a prolific investor. She's a prolific mom. They got three kids. She's a prolific wife. She's got to manage Fred Wilson. She's a prolific cook. Her Instagram is full of food, and that's what we ask where the food is. And prolific supporter of female entrepreneurs. And then finally, she's a podcaster herself with Positively Gotham Gal.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Makes you feel like we're not doing much. And so I haven't talked to her in a while. We were just catching up, but we're going to talk. We don't know what we're going to talk about because we can talk about anything. So we're going to talk mainly about investing, I think. So let's dial her up.
All right. Sounds good.
Joanne.
Howard.
Howie. So let me ask you a couple. I got 1,000 questions.
Okay.
The first thing is New York and Russell. You guys are prolific investors independently and through funds, and you're classic New Yorkers in the sense that you love the city, you love investing in the city and charitable in the city. How hard is it to see New York struggle like this?
You know, as an ultimate optimistic, it is upsetting, and you're seeing it obviously in all cities across the country. But you know, I always want to believe that we need to go somewhere to go somewhere else. And I've listened to a lot of the new mayoral candidates, and I'm going to hope there will be a change in the city, just as well a change across the country where real estate, gets rethought and, housing gets rethought and education gets rethought and allows more entrepreneurs and artistic people to return to the city.
And if it doesn't happen, it's happening in the cloud, right? This has been crazy artistic moment. Like I have a podcast, you have a podcast. Now you guys have been doing media forever, but it's like easier than ever to do this stuff. But we need it to happen in the cities as well. It can't just be all digital.
Yeah, I mean, there's, in the last couple of years due to social media and the fact that we walk around with phones all the time is, you know, you've seen the numbers at museums, the numbers in theater, the numbers in movies, like, you know, go up extraordinary because people want to go out and go to places where there's other humans and they can interact with. So I do think we'll have a new world in regards to retail. At the end of the day, people are still going to want to go out and go shopping and do things with other humans.
And so what is your favorite city these days? You spend part-time in LA. Is your favorite city Paris? And what do you think you'll do once COVID ends? What do you miss the most about your old life?
You know, Well, I miss seeing my friends. You know, I miss having dinner parties. I miss entertaining. I miss going out and meeting new people. I miss traveling. But New York City is still my favorite city. I think when this all ends, I'll go to Paris for a couple weeks, if not more. I mean, I really want to just get out of Dodge.
And what are you hearing about Paris? Same problems?
Same exact problems. They're about 3 weeks ahead of us. So, you know, even when the last weekend of normal weekend, which is in March, and we were watching this all play out, we were hanging out with, you know, Mo Koifman and Jeremy Phillips and Ben Leventhal. And we were all like, yeah, you know, this is only going to last a couple of weeks. But look what's happening in China. Look what's happening in Europe. And, you know, here we are, you know, 9 months later. So, I watch what's happening more in Europe than anything else because they seem to be about 3 weeks ahead of us.
And how did New York get this messed up? We go from Bloomberg. Like, what does it look like on the other side mayorally?
The good news is we have more than a handful of really fantastic qualified people running for that position. And so, you know, there's about four of them that I think are really smart and would all be great mayors and understand where the city needs to go. And so I'm really excited about that. And of course, the people will make their decision. But I do think that whoever wins certainly needs to think about how do you manage the largest business in the country or in the globe?
Yeah. New York comes back easier than most other cities, though, but just because people want to come to New York. So it has to work.
Well, people in general, I think, are very good at being reinventing themselves and are being are flexible when these type of things happen. I mean, you think about when this thing went down, like everyone was like, what the fuck? It's like being in a movie. You know, everyone's wearing a mask. Everyone's locked down. And like, we're all still here surviving unless we got sick and something happened. So, you know, human beings do what they got to do. So I think that the minute New York returns and movie theaters reopen and theaters reopen and restaurants reopen, you know, people will be very happy going in. There has to be, though, some kind of national database so that if I go to a restaurant, they know that I got the vaccine. You know, I don't want some idiot who's like an anti-vaxxer coming in the door with me. And so that has to change.
I don't see that. See, that's my worry. Literally, America's got away from us in that way. It's just we've lost that greater good. Everybody's got, I hope I'm wrong.
I don't know if we've lost the greater good. I think we've opened up something that's been festering forever.
And what do you think? So you think they can pull off this national database? Like, I'd love to know. I still think I'm going to go out because the numbers are the numbers, but I'm not going to be the first to go. I'll wait for people like yourselves who do more work than me to feel comfortable. Oh, Joanne's out. It's been 2 weeks. She's still alive. Linzens can leave the house. You guys can do the work.
Well, certainly the people that are going to be in the White House are, you know, light years more competent than the ones that were just in there. So that makes me feel really comfortable. I mean, just as all these people are being nominated to these posts, it's like we forgot how there could be really smart people who have had deep experience in government and the verticals they're involved in. I mean, the other people were like clowns.
It really was frustrating. It was really, I'm not political, and I'm still not. I mean, locally, I'm very political because I feel like I can make a difference. But nationally, I got dragged into it, and it felt like they were just playing a game to mess with my head. But I guess it felt like that for people. I guess their argument is that it felt like that to them under Obama. So I'm just happy.
I think it's racism at its finest.
Yeah. So today, Do you get as much excitement writing checks today as you did 10 years ago?
No.
Yep. And so what is it today that it takes? Because you're out there and you're public and people ask, you know, listen, even me, I never give out your name, but you know, everybody, you will share ideas here and there. So what is it today that, or you're just, actively just saying no all the time?
Yeah, you know, I have to say about a couple years ago, I really became disillusioned with the whole investment, investing as an angel and the entire echo chamber of investors. And so I really started to pull back because first, multiple reasons. One, everything is way too frothy. And you don't make money putting money in on something that their first valuation is $12 or $15 million.
I know. You and I are like yelling at the TV people. This is too easy. But yes, I agree.
You don't make money. I mean, even if you look at the best venture capitalists in the business, if they let you in the back door, they made money when they put in money, real money, at $3 to $5 million. So that's number one. So I'm like, I refuse to participate at that level. Uh-huh. And they weren't even real businesses, right, at the 12 to 15. They were just like, you know, we went to Y Combinator, like whoopee, okay? And so the second one is that, you know, I've been a generalist for so long, and as a single generalist, I think it's become harder to really understand each individual genre, because when I started, you know, 13, 14 years ago, technology was changing everything. So if you had your finger on the pulse of a variety of different things, which is something I like to do, you know, you could see something, you found a founder, they were a great founder, they're a great entrepreneur, you're like, okay, this makes sense. But now, if someone came into my office in a particular area that I'm not, you know, that deeply paying attention to, I really wouldn't know if there's 60 other people doing the same thing. But you can do it as a VC because you got a bunch of analysts to figure that out.
Yes.
So that's another thing. I think that if you want to be a really good angel these days, you're best to focus on one or two industries and be deep in those industries.
Correct.
So to me, that, you know, is another. The third is, you know, which I don't talk about publicly, but at this point I don't give a shit, is that I found it really frustrating as an angel. You know, you own such a small piece of these businesses, and I would do anything for those founders on the other side. I'm always available. Many would say, you know, that I was their consigliere. I still hear from founders that are, you know, way, way in the big, big, you know, Series C, Series D, asking for advice on something. And so that feels great. But I got frustrated with so many of the institutional investors where I would send deals to them and they would put money into one of the six, and the one that they chose was the worst. And I couldn't stand it anymore. Or you know, a company where I own 1%, a VC owned 10, and they did jack. You know, and they barely even showed up for a board meeting. And I couldn't stand it anymore. It just pissed me off. And so I was like, I need to pull back for a while.
I see that. And maybe it's the casualness and just the length of this boom. Because, you know, I talk to a lot of professionals. I mean, luckily, mm-hmm. you know, from Fred on down to GGV and all the people that you know and I know, I keep my circle pretty narrow. But I'm always probing. And so like you, as I've gotten older, I can't be a generalist. Like I go deep. People ask me, what are you thinking? I go, oh man, I got one trick. I mean, if people stop trading, how is that a business? So I've just gotten lucky that the one trick that I have keeps getting more interesting, right? Fred used to be into this space with street.com, but I've just kind of kept going deeper. And now with Robinhood and with eToro and with StockTwits and with like, it just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've gotten a little lucky.
Technology is changing that. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you got lucky, but there's no doubt that, you know, luck is involved and smarts are involved. But, you know, I think each industry has gotten bigger and broader with the right people at the top because technology has allowed that. Yeah. But also you have a fund now, so you can own a significant amount of piece so that your voice at the table is heard in a different way.
Yes. And so do you like investing in funds more than just company? Because I know you guys are prolific doing that too. And that's kind of where I've taken my personal money, is I don't want to pick, you know, everybody says, oh, we can make room for you personally. I'm like, nah, I just would rather do a fund because, you know, like you, valuations are high and I can't really, like you, like I'll put in, I'll get a quarter point. I don't really have money to do pro rata. And then I do more work than the VCs. And it's just that the math doesn't work anymore.
No, so I and like your time is valuable.
Yes. As you, I'm 55. So like every day could be my last day.
I doubt it, but yes. I mean, God forbid. I mean, yeah, but that's the whole thing. It's like time is money. And I think also when you started out, when you did, which is there wasn't a lot of us and everyone talked to each other and everyone's super helpful. And like, yeah, I'm happy to take that call. Yeah, I'm happy to take that. But, you know, and it's just like, wait a second. You know, what's the value to me here? There's none. And so then I got to the point where I'm like, unless I get value out of this, I'm not having this call.
Love it. So you have Spielkes like me. So what are you keeping? What are you keeping busy? I mean, obviously it's family, family, family right now then.
So, you know, a lot of different things. First of all, I am, you know, never say never, right? I mean, I just did a great weed deal a year ago. And the other thing is, you know, I'm still getting, if it's the right company and I really like what they're doing, I won't put money in necessarily, but I'll get options and I'll be an advisor. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I've gotten bolder. Like I have a company that's about to do a big round and I found the money for him. And so I said, you know, listen, I want half a point just for doing all this stuff. And they're like, of course. And I was like, you know, I'm getting better at asking. So what am I keeping busy at? So we're building apartment buildings. So that takes up time.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Frame Home.
It's not called Kushner Enterprises?
No, it's not real called apartments? Kushner Enterprises. Okay. And I will say we're the first developers in New York City that is building a completely carbon-free building.
I love it. You love real estate.
I love real estate. So it is, you know, cross-laminated timber. There are solar panels. We're our own electric company. So, you know, we're the ones that are billing our tenants. Fabulous Wi-Fi. We're also putting pods in the ground floor instead of our retail space so that you could rent out an 8x8 pod every month. There'll be 20, I think we have 26 of them down there. So, you know, instead of going to WeWork, you get to go to one of these pods. You feel very safe, COVID free, and all of that. So we're excited about that. We're building that one should be up and running in Brooklyn and Clinton Hill in the next month. And then we're building another one in Clinton Hill as well. And I am going to be joining the board of the Fund for the City of Public Housing in New York, which I'm very excited about, that works with NYCHA. And I'm looking into buying another piece of real estate and opening up a store in New York.
Ooh, fashion or food?
Total concept, food, fashion. It's like walking into someone's apartment, you know, and a new business model where there's no inventory.
And where would the store be? Street level?
Street level, West Village, and the name is Gotham.
And the name is Gotham. So I come into the store and what is the experience you want me to have? Because you and I like the same things. Like I'm all about fashionology and like retail.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
What is the experience supposed to be? Who is it for?
It is for anybody. It could be a variety of street. Let's say you come in on Friday afternoon and you go over to the coffee bar, you have a coffee standing, you go sit in one of the chairs, you happen to notice there's like a super cool sweater with pants there hanging, and you're like, these are really great. You walk over to the trough and you see there's a shampoo, a conditioner, and you know, shower gel, and you try it out and you wash your hands and you dry them and you buy it with a QR code off your phone. And then you go upstairs, you get some maybe cheese and some natural wine, maybe something else to eat. It's Friday afternoon and in comes someone in politics in New York that is there to take questions from the crowd. Or if you show up on Thursday, maybe there's a crochet club going on in the corner to help people learn how to crochet. And so nothing is in inventory except for certain things of stores that I have seen go out of business and I want to remain in business. They don't pay me rent. We get paid at POS. And so it's a different model. It's also rev share for all the employees that work there. So it could be a different experience every day. You can come and have lunch one day. You can come and just have a coffee. You come in and have a tea. You're like, I love that teapot. You could buy it right there. It comes to your house 2 days later. You'd like the art on the wall. You're like, oh my God, that would look so great. I love that piece. You could buy that piece of art. You come back 2 days later, there's new art on the wall. There's new stuff. Everything's been turned upside down. So you're coming back to see what we have going on every day.
And is this just a Joanne production, or is there a partner?
No, this is a Joanne production. Something I've had in my mind literally since my college days. It was like my thesis. But now it's going to come to fruition. It's going to be a project that is passionate, a passion project.
If I was going to do one passion project, and I talk about it with a lot of people, and I think I got lucky because I was 90% of the way there 10 different times over the last 5 years. It was more like kind of a WeWork for the Stock Twitch community, meaning, you know, Stock Twitch is organically growing faster than ever, but took forever to grow community. And you know social media, so you're an investor, but you know, I should just give you an investor update. Going great, Joanne. But the... and Rishi's doing an incredible job. But the thing is, I always said, listen, there should be physical meets social, right? Like, I always wonder why Facebook earlier on didn't just get into the physical space. And maybe in hindsight, they'll wish they did, especially with the DOJ coming down. But like, StockTwits people love StockTwits. But if there was a StockTwits store, kind of like Eataly or Rally Row, where you could come in and it's like Cheers, but not Cheers. But it's like you said, it's like, you know, it's not E-Trade, but you can come in and there's rooms for you to have seminars around investing. And now that Robinhood, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a place where people who love talking about money and trading and investing can hang out. And if they want to buy the art on the wall that's, you know, chart-driven art, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's just a store about investing. And Eataly kind of did that for
they
Italian.
Did. Yeah. I mean, I like what you're thinking, because what it really is a country club.
It's a country club for people who love talking about money, because money is, it's not like Thurston Howell the Third money. It's like young people who like Robinhood or day trading or not day trading or long-term investing or want to learn. And there's books there on investing, but there's also a place to do a seminar, and there's a place to open up your laptop and talk about the markets loud or not loud. And you know, a StockTwits member can have it for $200 a year for StockTwits. They can just show up at the club whenever they're in town, type thing. But also walk in off the street. I was always inspired by Eataly the way they did it, but obviously that's built around high margin food and other things. Are you a frequenter of Eataly? Is that impressive as an operation to you?
I love Eataly. The guy who's behind it is fantastic. It is a little
touristy.
Gives you a little anxiety when you go in there. It's definitely tourist because the way that it's laid out. Yeah. I've been to the original one in Italy. It's in what town is it in? It's in it's a real pithole of a town. I hate to say it, it also had that frenetic type feeling. And the one in LA is great too. They opened up one in Paris. It's fantastic. I mean, I just think they've done a great job all in all.
So I think the Eataly model for everything will happen, right? Like Restoration Hardware's mastered it, you know, pre-COVID of like, you can't buy anything. Like, I was a Restoration Hardware fan forever. And then like to see them do that, like store, like where fashion meets chill meets technology meets, yeah, you don't have no pressure. Was genius.
Yeah, no, it's really genius. And, you know, I think I don't know him personally. I've only heard great things about the guy behind Restoration Hardware. But I mean, he saw where things were going and he made decisions in the short term. I'm sure the stock market was pissed off, but in the long term, win-win.
Win-win. So retail to you comes back just way different.
For sure. And just way different.
It's such a no-brainer. And what areas of the city? So where did you do this apartment? But is it apartment or condos? Meaning it's for leasing or truly people own it?
No, only renting.
And so why'd you choose that model? Is that a better model as a developer?
It all depends on which model you're interested in. I mean, for us, you know, we've been very lucky financially, and we wanted to be smart about where we parked our cash. And we felt this was a great way to be entrepreneurial and also self-starters in regards to making an impact or no impact on the environment. And so for, you know, we can leave this for generations to come. And so that is why we chose to do rentals.
And is it you or is it you and Fred?
It's me and Fred.
And then are the kids entrepreneurial or no?
Yes, they are. You know, Jessica's an artist, so she works for herself. You know, proud mom. She just had a show at the New Museum. It's still up. You can see it online. So that's pretty major. She's definitely an artist. When you have something in the museum, I think that as an artist, you can say, okay, yes, I'm an artist.
That's so cool.
It is so cool. And Emily is writing tons of things for anywhere from Taste to Bon Appetit to others. She's built her own name for herself in the food industry and on social media and is, you know, well-respected. She's a great writer. So she doesn't work for anyone. Josh has no interest in ever working for anyone, and he's going to figure out what he wants to do. You know, I think that one of the hardest things for kids right now in their 20s is A, COVID, and B is that, you know, the world is his oyster and, you know, he's got a lot of oysters to choose from. So he's going to have to figure out which path he wants to go down, but he doesn't want to sit behind the desk and he doesn't want to work for anyone. So we'll see what that happens. I think it'd be very hard for any of our children to work for anyone after living in our household. And, you know, they're sort of part of the family business too. I mean, I've gotten feedback from Emily what I should do in the store. I've gotten feedback from Josh. I mean, you know, everyone sort of puts their stamp on it, as well as even these apartments that we're building.
So I see the same thing with Max, who's only 21. How old's Josh, 25?
Josh is going to be 25 in February.
So it was so different when you and Fred was an Army brat. So I can't remember all the stories, but when I was 25, oh man, you had to have already, you had three wool suits and...
Totally.
And you had four seasons of clothing and you had we had to have a path. And I think, you know, my daughter is the opposite. You know, Rachel is like, follows the path. And I was always like, oh, soon as that path throws her a curve, she's going to get pissed. And this is what COVID was. And my son's the other way. He's never thought the path mattered. And he's being rewarded by COVID because all his friends who were on the path are like fucking miserable. And he's golfing, has two jobs, and didn't have to waste a couple of years in school because he dropped out. So it's really interesting how, you know, life is longer for these kids. Like we had to be a lawyer, doctor, a kid. We had different things that we had to do, and they were kind of stupid careers. They're the things that machines are basically replacing, accounting and legal. And unless you want to be a doctor, you might as well be an entrepreneur. So there's no rush to do it. You might as well gain experience.
It's true. I also think it takes boys a little longer.
Well, that's, you know, I'm not going to let Ellen hear this podcast because then Ellen would, she treats Max like he's 90 and he's underachieved. Whereas I'm like, honey, he's 21 and he's not going to be a lawyer or a doctor. Thank God.
Yeah.
Meaning, so he's got the rest of the life ahead of him to figure out what the hell it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to live to be 100.
Did they all like school?
They loved college.
So all three loved
school?
I
could see Josh going back to school for 2 years. I mean, we'll see. He's super smart. I think it'd be a great place to park his brain for 2 years. But, you know, it's his decision, not mine.
And then what about Brooklyn versus New York? How has COVID changed that path, if at all?
Well, Brooklyn is such so much more residential. And so the areas that were residential really are doing okay, right? Because there aren't a lot of stores and those stores were supporting the neighborhood. In areas of New York that are residential, of course, there's tons of stores at street level. Many are gone. But when you go into areas like where the Ace Hotel is in the 20s, you know, that area is always been more commercial and was slowly becoming more residential. Those areas are funky, right? Because, you know, it happened quicker in regards to closures of places and there's homeless people there. And so those areas are funky. You don't see that as much as in Brooklyn.
And so what happens then? Because, you know, you can build apartments. We got to deal with housing issues, all the big cities.
Totally.
And all the tax laws were, you know, it came to a head for me because I'm not a real estate person. It just never interested me. So when Trump paid $750, it's not like, okay, of all the crazy stuff, part of that stuff, tax evasion, whatever, the tax system has been built for real estate people. And then COVID comes along. And really, that one really stung me because we got all this overbuilt commercial real estate, and as beautiful as it all looks, once you really think about it, wow, did we waste a lot of fucking materials and energy and time building commercial skyscrapers that aren't needed.
I completely agree with you, and we should, there's a lot of people to blame here, but when you come into New York and you see Hudson Yards, what is completely detached from the city, one of the greatest thing about the city is the attachment from neighborhood to neighborhood as you walk through it, is that that Hudson Yards might as well be in an island in the middle of the
Hudson
River.
Well, it looks like Dubai.
Someone actually said, I heard someone actually say at this event that I was at, now I don't need to go to Dubai.
Yeah.
But the reality is, my biggest joy would be to see that entire thing become middle-income housing. I mean, what is the point of building a 1980s glittering mall in 2020?
Yeah, that was kind of, there were so many signs, right? You and I are complaining about little valuation problems at the 10 to 12 million.
But those were signs.
SoftBank was a sign, you know.
SoftBank, WeWork, they were all signs. WeWork was the biggest sign. That is a real estate business. Being valued like a software business.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big red flag. And even the Wing.
Yeah, the Wing I walked away from.
It's a real estate business. Oh my God, totally didn't even touch. I mean, at the end of the day, the perfect explanation of all these real estate businesses, a venture capitalist emailed me and asked if I would talk to his wife because she wanted to do this WeWork type thing, but it's more like, you know, for young families, right? Like a Y for families.
Huh.
And I was like, oh, so, yeah, good idea. Like, you know, when you're like looking for a place to go to eat or have whatever. So she's telling me her whole concept. We're talking about food. And in the end, I said to her, you know, I just have one question. Do you own the building? She's like, yeah. I was like, then you should do it. Because if you're renting the building, it makes no sense.
No, I mean, it's the exact same reason I never did my like Cheers for Finance ideas, because it's not a scalable business at that level. Meaning if I have one Stocktwits Cheers Howie bar, that's one thing. It's just a flagship Howie place of investing, right? You can stumble in, you can buy a book. It's like Larry David of retail, right? You don't know what you're going to get. And not scalable, but that's what makes it cool. That's what used to make New York cool. But yes, there were all these signs. And man, when I went to see the hedge funds for an hour back in pre-COVID, and I went over to that Hudson near that miserable part of town that could have been
miserable.
Could be so great. And then you just like cross over the chasm into like Dubai. I'm like, wait a minute. Who let this happen? So who let that happen? Was that Bloomberg or Schmendrick, the Schmendrick that we got?
Well, it's a good question. It really happened through the Bloomberg administration. And Dan, you know, Doctorow had a lot to do with it. And, you know, truth is tax dollars paid for it.
Yeah.
It was awful.
There's going to be years of pain because of that. Midtown will be hard. It just feels like Midtown is now an anchor versus an opportunity. I worry about Midtown.
You know, I mean, cities reinvent itself. I mean, yeah. Tribeca was no man's land and, you know, it was very funky. It was very scary at night. Soho used to be scary at night. Now it's like the biggest mall of America. And then after 9/11, I mean, it really transformed downtown to be what it is today. And in many ways, stronger and better on multiple levels. In really weird little strips, there was no one, and now there is.
And so what happens at Broadway, in your opinion? Because I felt like it needed to be modernized. So what happens post-COVID?
Well, you know, I think what's going to happen is, I'm hoping it's going to happen, is that this Governor Cuomo is going to basically say, if you have an empty space, you have this much time to rent it at the market price, figure it out, or you're going to be fined. And if you have took on massive amount of money, which many did, debt from the bank, which is absurd, I only put down 10% and 90% the bank owns. And the bank shouldn't be in the business of owning buildings that are defaulted on. But the banks will say, well, you can't take rent above this price, you know, below this price. And so then they're kind of stuck. Someone needs to put their foot in and say, too bad. And so then we'll see all the commercial spaces go down by a dramatic amount, maybe 50%. And then we'll see really interesting places go in that are creative and can afford the rent and be of interest.
because enough people, and then everything just gets created again.
Exactly.
Exciting. That's the way I feel about things. New York is the place where, you know, I've always been tempted to buy, and I'm like, everybody says, don't buy. Just go rent. Go Airbnb. And I'm not an
Airbnb.
Now's
the time to buy.
I know. But it's those weird extra. It's like you never really own it because of these crazy taxes and the crazy fees. So that's just, it's annoying. And
yeah, well, if you want to be there, that's what it costs. But not, I do think that the pricing, we'll see a lot of commercial real estate go down dramatically. Yes.
And so I'm excited for New York. My daughter can't wait to move there. Is there, what do you feel if you had to live in one other city? Would it be LA or would it be Europe?
Europe, but you know, I don't have the socialization that I have in LA or in Los Angeles. Like, I love my friends out there, my brothers out there. I see these people a lot. They're wonderful human beings. So I really do love that. But in terms of how I like to live my life, Paris.
Got it. And then what about Fred? Being locked up together this long with his brain and your brain, do you guys carry weapons? Do the Wilsons carry any weapons?
No.
How long have you guys been married?
Well, we've been together almost 40 years.
Wow.
So I've been married like 35 years, something like that.
So 40, you guys are getting up there. Is Fred not 60? Fred's 58, 59?
59.
And so is there still the Wall Street ring?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
And see, so no one knows the story. So tell people this story. We don't have to talk numbers. So tell people this is a great story. Fred's just
clueless. No, it is. We met Howard when we were out in Arizona. And this is, you know, he was reading Fred's blog and said, and then, you know, commenting, whatever. And Fred's like, I'm going to go out to a basketball game with him and his son, I think, and his wife. And I think Josh went too. And
yeah, Josh.
My Emily and Jess were like, who is this person? Oh my God, he's a star.
You met a guy on the internet?
He's going to kill you. Yeah. And then you started Wall Strip, which was brilliant. And we put our own personal money in, and then you sold it, and we made the money back. And Fred took the money and bought me a diamond with something that he had never bought me before.
I didn't know that. And I was like, Fred, Fred, here's the thing you can't do. I said, now every time your wife looks at the ring, she's going to be thinking of me. And this is so it's like, I'm in his
how
head.
How many years ago is that? I think
this is 2006. And I remember, I never met you. This is the funniest fucking story. So I never met
you.
So
this is my 30th wedding, 2006. I say, that must be my 20th wedding anniversary.
So I think there should be a Coinbase ring at this point. Have you lobbied for a Coinbase ring?
No. At this point, I'm lobbying for my store.
So if you, would you ever open a restaurant or no?
There's going to be a restaurant inside. I mean, and we'll have, it'll be very similar to the store, which is don't expect to come every day and have your favorite salad, because whatever we're in the mood for that day is what we're going to make.
And so is that your favorite thing to do personally through this COVID?
Cook?
Yeah.
Sometimes not. I mean, honestly, like, I think we're also sick of our own cooking and trying to be creative. I mean, literally at the beginning, I lost my shit. I mean, I crocheted 5 blankets. I made a, quilt from scratch with, you know, with the sewing machine and materials. I've been like trying to keep myself busy. But you know, it's good. It feels good to make those things.
You guys have been really thinking through, you know, testing and vaccine and stuff. So when do you think New York opens?
I think sometime around April, May, June, people are going to start to feel much, are going to start being really vaccinated in a large way. And my feeling is that come third quarter, you know, it's going to be like crazy town. I mean, that, you know, people, like, it's like cockroaches getting, you know, getting out of their houses. I mean, I think that is going to be, that third quarter will be amazing. And we are going to see everyone coming out of their homes and just literally sighing with deep relief.
And then what about, was the hardest part, because you guys are very into restaurants and backing local chefs. Was that mm-hmm. the hardest part, is just seeing that kind of chaos?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really sad. I mean, it's not only the restaurateurs, it's the staff, it's the people that supply the liquor, it's the people that supply the flowers, it's the farmers that supply, you know, the materials to make the food. I mean, there's so many different layers of the restaurant industry that has been affected by this. And, you know, they were having a hard time anyhow in the last couple of years where, you know, making any margins in that business became so hard because there's a New York City tax that taxes each employee like a ridiculous amount. So that too needs to be rethought in order for to have restaurants that can succeed. There will be restaurants, but they have to rethink that tax structure so that we can have restaurants and they can survive as singular entrepreneurs and then make the money to have a lifestyle business, which is what they usually were until along came all the celebrity chefs. You know, I think it needs to get down to that. Unfortunately, there's not really any even coalition that, you know, goes and talks to government that represents all those restaurants. I mean, they really are the backbone of America's singular entrepreneurs who don't belong to like a lobbyist.
Right. I'm scared about that the most because we need those to make New York great. Right. Because mm-hmm. food is New York. Right. I think of a neighborhood and I think of an experience. And if we've scared off the investors like you, because you're going to have COVID recency bias, meaning, oh, we love you, but like fucking taxes and like we've been there and I know mm-hmm. it's not going to be COVID again, but like this is like almost charity at this point. So it's almost like that's the big problem. Like if we can't get these singular businesses going, everything won't come back the way we want.
Nothing will come back the way we want. It will all be new. Mm-hmm. You'll have entrepreneurs that are opening up restaurants that are rethinking how many hours. They'll rethink how many things will be on the menu. They'll start making products around their menu. Maybe they'll be the new CPG entrepreneurs. They'll yeah. have a little corner bistro. They'll sell vegetables from the local farmer. I mean, they will reinvent themselves in the industry. I think everyone will reinvent themselves in the industry that they're drawn to.
Yep. Well, it's exciting. So I'm on the same page as you. The artisan world will, you know, I'm worried that it stays in the cloud, but it cities like New York, it'll come back strong because of the traffic and the people. So I'm excited to see what's on the other side of it because things became too Gucci, Prada, Nike.
I agree.
Even Lulu. It became It became too that.
Yeah, everyone looked the same.
Everybody looked the same. And what's been your favorite show?
Well, I will say, and before I forget, I'll get off this, is that what we really need to put money into is public transportation. And there should be a new deal around public transportation because people that have left the major cities to go to the secondary cities like Austin, I mean, you know, or, you know, cities in South Carolina where they've like, I can't afford this anymore, but I want to be part of a really great community and city. They're starting to get expensive because people have left the big cities to go there. So then what comes next? But if you want to live 3 hours outside the city and you can, and your job is in New York City, you only need to come in one day a week, which is where we're going to go. Why can't you get on a high-speed train to come in and come in an hour? So I think that we have to rethink how we're all connected by transportation.
Love it. And then finally, can I ask you?
Favorite
show. And then one more question. Favorite, what's been surprising you the most? Because obviously you and I, we're media hounds.
Yeah.
And so what's been your favorite thing about, because Ellen and I have watched everything. And
Well, we're not huge TV watchers. Like, I'm a huge book reader, but I will say during this, it's like, oh, please spare me. We got to watch something here, right?
Yeah.
So we watched The Queen's Gambit, which I thought was terrific.
Great.
So good. Such a great thing about this woman who is like...
Came out of nowhere. She powered.
Yeah, and they all loved her. It had nothing to do with her being... No one was anti-female. It was embracing of her brain, right? So I thought that was super cool. And then, you know, when I lived in London during college, I was obsessed with the monarchy. I mean, I literally stood in line for 6 hours to see Diana and Prince Charles' wedding gifts. Uh-huh. So we are almost done with The Crown. I think we have like 2 shows left. And then I've seen a couple documentaries that we really like the Mr. The Octopus one.
It was great, one The Octopus one.
So good.
I wasn't even high and I loved it.
So good. And then you have to watch The Fantastic Fungi. Fabulous, fabulous documentary. And then I watched the four piece documentary on Reagan on Showtime, which is I'm obsessed with Reagan because I really think he's the reason we are today. And he destroyed the middle class and he destroyed the country because he was an actor basically representing terrible right-wing Republicans. And that is absolutely worth watching.
Oh, I'm excited. So that's on Showtime?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Now, one thing, you've met everybody, you get to do everything. If you could Uber drive one person for the day, who would it be?
Ooh.
Besides me.
Besides you.
How about dead or alive?
Dead or alive? No. I don't want to think dead because it was just a different time period. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I'd love to hang out with Michelle Obama for the day.
Nice. Would you let her in the front seat or back seat?
Totally front seat. She's such a baller. I love that woman. I think she is awesome.
This has been fun. You're the best.
This has been fun.
I waited way too long. Kiss the ring. How we says
and,
kiss the ring.
When I open my store, we can do a live podcast.
I just want a little chair in the corner, Howie Town.
I'm happy to give it to you.
Okay, there. So be well. Say hi to the Fredster.
You too. Say hi to Ellen. And we'll talk soon.
Okay. Cheers.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Joanny there, Knut.
Yeah.
Scared the life out of me the first time I met her. She just called me up. She's like, Lindsay's dressing like a waif. I'm like, who? I thought Fred invested. I didn't know I got Joanne. It was like, I got tag teamed. And I agreed with her. I'm like, yeah, well, we don't have a budget. We raised $40 from Fred. I'm not going to tell. You can't go tell a woman to change her clothes.
I think I put $5 in.
So that was my first introduction. Then it was like Fred said, well, you know, I never bought her a ring. So whatever, no pressure on you, Harry. But if you make any money here, I'm going to spend every nickel on a ring for Joanne.
A man of his word.
He is. And I'm like, you're an idiot because she's going to look at that ring and think of me. So it's good to finally get her on the pod. And she knows New York better than anybody. She's the person I just, you know, you want to hang out with in New York. So anyways, you're listening to Panic with Friends. We didn't get into all the struggles of their lives. And it's not like all perfection. They've been grinding away in New York for 30 years. But great investors. That's what we do here on Panic with Friends. We talk to great investors, traders, entrepreneurs, founders, and talk about life and investing. So you can follow us on Spotify and Apple. You can subscribe. That way you'll get an alert from the Spotify or the Apple that we've got a new podcast. And subscribe. If you like what I have to say, howardlinson.com, you can get my blog. I send out a free daily email about markets and trends. Thanks, Knut. Thanks, StockTwits, for distributing. We'll talk to everybody soon.